we're discussing what the federal government knows about UFOs and whether a forthcoming report will shed light on alien life. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Here's President Obama on The Late Late Show with James Corden in May saying, look, when he got into office, he asked whether there was a lab somewhere that housed the alien specimens in spaceships.
What is true, and I'm actually being serious here, is that there's footage and records of objects in the skies that we don't know exactly what they are. People still take seriously trying to investigate and figure out what that is.
Does the idea of intelligent life visiting Earth scare you or fascinate you? 800-642-1234. Ralph Blumenthal was a reporter for the New York Times from 1964 to 2009, author of 7 books. His latest one is called The Believer, Alien Encounters, Hard Science, and the Passion of John Mack. Ralph, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Thank you, Kate. Pleasure to be with you.
Well, let's start in 2017 when you broke this story at the New York Times about how the Pentagon had been quietly investigating UFO sightings since 2007. What can you tell us about this program?
Well, it was a secret. Harry Reid, then the Senate Majority Leader, got $22 million into the black budget, the Pentagon budget, in other words, not disclosed, in order to set up the secret unit in the Pentagon to track these objects that Navy pilots and sailors were seeing. There'd been a subsequently celebrated series of encounters in 2004 off the West Coast. And frankly, military was very puzzled. So they set up this unit, the Advanced Aerospace Threat Identification Program, ATIP, to track these encounters. And it stayed secret until we broke the story, I and 2 colleagues in the New York Times in December 2017.
So former U.S. Senator Harry Reid, he pushed for this program in leading the efforts for this Advanced Aviation Threat Identification Program, making this a fully funded government program. What was his interest in UFOs?
He was always curious about these anomalous encounters. I mean, he comes from the West, Nevada, where, you know, there's a long history of strange things in the desert. He was very courageous, unlike many of his colleagues who ran away from this as a, you know, fearing the ridicule. He's been very forthright in saying that he was curious about it. He was not making any conclusions. He wasn't speculating, you know, what these are, where they came from, but he wanted to know more. So he got this funding, and he arranged it through Robert Bigelow, a fellow Nevadan who... Real estate billionaire who was very involved in anomalous encounters, including a ranch he had in Utah where all kinds of strange things were going on. But he also had a module and still has a module attached to the International Space Station. So he can make things happen. He's very adept at aerospace. So he was going to do some of the research for this program, and it lasted at least till 2012 when the government said it went out of business. We think it continued, and it's in a new incarnation today.
What is going on at this Skinwalker Ranch investigation, this ranch in Utah?
Well, he sold it since then, but what happened is a couple had bought the ranch, and all kinds of strange things were happening there.
I think we just lost our connection.
All kinds of strange things were going on at this ranch in Utah, which seemed associated with ancient Navajo lore about shape-shifting witches and strange creatures, giant wolves that couldn't be killed by bullets, portals that opened up. And frankly, they did a lot of research funded by... Robert Bigelow. They took video, and they ended up with almost as many or more questions than they had when they started. But at least nothing could be written off as imaginary. I mean, these things were seen by many people. They were tracked in some cases. So the mystery remains. Now somebody else has bought it, another billionaire, and the research continues.
If you're just joining us, we're talking with Ralph Blumenthal, a former New York Times reporter, correspondent for 45 years. We're talking about UFO sighting investigations and the forthcoming Pentagon report. You can join in. Do you believe there is an intelligent alien life out there, or do you think that we're alone in the universe? What would make you change your mind? 800-642-1234. Let's bring in a call now. Andrew is joining us from Waukesha. Hi, Andrew.
Yeah, hi. Thanks for taking my call. Good morning. You know, I can't help but laugh. You know, this is a serious issue, and I don't mean to say that people aren't taking it seriously, but you're talking about shape-shifting witches and giant wolves. Let me just bring this down to a more civilian level, okay? There are two implications here. One is national security, okay? We saw on 9/11 that the Pentagon could not bring down slow, lumbering jetliners, and now we're talking about craft that can accelerate and move at speeds that are unmatched in our observable air. So there are huge implications for national security. Not only that, but bringing it down to the more domestic level, if these craft are capable of doing those things, that means there's an energy source, energy that could pump our water, energy that could grow our crops, energy that could solve climate crisis. So I think we do ourselves a disservice by joking about it, talking about things that, you know, if Skinwalker Ranch is real or not, that's not important. What's important is that there are national security implications and domestic issues that could be seriously addressed.
Andrew, thank you. Ralph, are UFOs a true national security threat?
Well, in the sense that we don't know what they are, we cannot duplicate their spectacular aerodynamics. Yes, they are. Fortunately, perhaps, they seem to be as big a mystery to our earthly adversaries as they are to us. We hear that the Russians and the Chinese are as mystified by these things as we are. So at least, you know, we're not battling some earthly adversary with, you know, greatly advanced aerodynamics. We're all in the same boat. But there is a race, for sure, to try to understand this technology and duplicate it. So that has national security implications. And I couldn't agree with the caller more. It's not a matter of ridicule. I was not joking about Skinwalker Ranch. There were serious anomalies there that remained very mysterious, that seemed to frustrate technology because they couldn't be caught on tape or video. And high-level observers with scientific credentials observed some of these phenomena and were also mystified. So I agree, this is a very serious topic and not to be joked about.
Let's look at the Air Force and Navy pilots who have encountered flying objects that they didn't know what they were. And here's an excerpt from one of those encounters a few years ago off the coast of San Diego with two Navy pilots unsure of what they're seeing.
There's a whole fleet of them. Look on the ASA. My gosh. They're all going against the wind. The wind's 120 knots from the west. Look at that thing, dude.
Are there theories about what those pilots might have seen?
No. In a word, the Pentagon has been very careful not to speculate, not to attribute these sightings to alien aircraft, because they just don't know. The big breakthrough was acknowledging that they absolutely exist physically in the first place. And that wasn't the case a few years ago. They were attributed to reflection, swamp gas, hallucinations, bugs on the windshield, all kinds of things. Now, thanks to the Navy radar and thermal imaging devices and, you know, the accounts of highly trained observers like the pilots and sailors you just played the recording of, we know rather conclusively that these things exist. That is a huge breakthrough. We couldn't say that a few years ago. Now, again, what they are, where they come from, who's running them, are they intelligent, why are they here? Those are questions, though, that's pure speculation. We don't know that, but at least we know that they exist.
Journalist and author Ralph Blumenthal, he wrote The Believer, the biography of psychiatrist John Mack, who studied UFO abduction accounts at the risk of his professional career. There's a new intelligence report on UFOs due out to be delivered to Congress. Are you in support of the Defense Department investigating UFO sightings? 800-642-1234. Back in a minute with Ralph Blumenthal and the Ideas Network. We're talking about sightings of UFOs and the forthcoming report from the Pentagon's task force intended to investigate them. It is the morning show. I'm Kate Archer Kent. Former Senator Harry Reid told NPR's Morning Edition last week that there have been a lot of sightings of things that people can't understand and atmospheric conditions can't explain them away.
These vehicles have been witnessed by scientists, astrophysicists. It's something that the American people need to know more about, and the federal government better help.
What do you make of the changing conversation around UFOs? 800-642-1234. We have author and journalist Ralph Blumenthal with us for the hour. Let's bring in Rachel now in Eau Claire. Hi, Rachel.
Hi. Thank you for having me. I think there is life out there. We're a very egocentric type of life, and I find it very hard to believe that there's not something else out there. If we've been able to develop this far, I think there's something out there as well. I just think our egos are sometimes getting in the way of that.
Rachel, thank you. We are egocentric, and Rachel says there certainly could be life out there, Ralph.
Well, you know, mathematically, certainly you calculate the billions of planets, the great numbers of planets with conditions resembling Earth's. Yes, mathematically, a lot of scientists have come to that conclusion. The question is, would the life resemble?
I think we just, you faded out there. Carry on.
The question is, would this life resemble Oz? That's where, you know, all the speculation breaks down, or at least, you know, is revealed as simple speculation. So I don't think it's terribly useful to speculate on whether these craft are alien craft, what planet they come from, why are they here, because it doesn't really get us very far. Our reporting in the Times was very solidly centered on the physical observations of these craft, that they exist. Everybody was on the record who we quoted, which is why the article, you know, got the placement they did on page one on a Sunday, the original article, and subsequent articles were also very well received on, you know, near misses with some of these objects, and some briefings of Congress as to whether materials had been recovered. It's an open question. It's highly classified. But, you know, we don't speculate on whether this is alien life. Do they look like us? Why? You know, those questions are just they don't get us very far.
Let's talk about the late psychiatrist John Mack, who you have a new biography on. Can you introduce us to him?
Yeah, John Mack was a esteemed member of the Harvard faculty. He had written a book that won the Pulitzer Prize, a biography of T.E. Lawrence of Arabia. He was a social activist who protested nuclear weapons. He got arrested with his family in Nevada. Based on his research for the Lawrence of Arabia book, he went to the Middle East, tried to make peace with the Arabs and Israelis, met with Yasser Arafat. I guess we know how that went, but he tried. So he was very earth-centered, very socially active, charismatic, tall, cobalt-eyed, magnetic to men and women. He was a very towering figure intellectually. He'd written books on nightmares, on the Holocaust, on a wide range of subjects. So he came to the topic with a great deal of credibility. Now, through a series of steps I outline in the book, he shifted from these social concerns to questions of what else might be out there in the cosmos or in our psyche that goes beyond the ordinary dimensions of reality as we understand it. So his horizons opened up, and he didn't mind risking his Harvard reputation to pursue them. So when he heard that all these people, and there were a great number of them, were recounting encounters, what they believed were encounters, what they were firmly convinced were encounters with alien beings, he decided to research it. And he called the people in and he interviewed them, and both consciously and through relaxation techniques like hypnosis. And he came away convinced that something had happened to them that could not be explained. And that was his great contribution.
That was his contribution. And how did you come to write his biography?
Well, I was the New York Times correspondent in Texas in 2004 when I happened to pick up his second book called Passport to the Cosmos. And I had never heard of him. I was kind of naive, as he was in his way naive, and thought that I had kind of discovered him, a Harvard psychiatrist who was interested in alien encounters. So I thought, I got to give this guy a call and make a good story for the New York Times. I didn't realize he'd already been in the New York Times. He'd been on Oprah. He was really quite well known, although not to me. And a few days later, I picked up the paper and found he'd been run over in London and killed by a drunk driver. It was not an assassination. It was a simple road accident, with Americans looking the wrong way in England. So I couldn't interview him, but I contacted the family and I got access to his archives, which were considerable. He taped everything. And the family, by the way, gave me that access with no preconditions. And I was able to put together over 16 years the story of his extraordinary quest through an investigation by Harvard, by the way, because they were not entirely happy with the publicity that he was bringing them. And they conclude in the end he did nothing wrong, and he should be perhaps a little less enthusiastic, which he understood. But there was no discipline. Anyway, that's how I got into it. And I was captivated, as he was, by the phenomenon, because the more you go into these stories of these people, the more you eliminate what the so-called skeptics keep coming up with. Oh, they're mentally ill, they're hallucinating, they're doing it for publicity. And none of that is true. These were perfectly ordinary people from all walks of life, men, women, children as young as two or three, who couldn't be said to be, quoting from books they had read. For these reasons and others that Mac put together, it turned out to be a real mystery. And I agreed with him. I find it a mystery. Spoiler alert, there is no solution at the end of the book to this mystery. I don't say what it is. I sort of say what it's not, as I said, not mental illness, not publicity seeking, not hoaxes, not all the things that people think it might be. But what it is remains a mystery.
If you're just joining us, we're talking with Ralph Blumenthal about aliens and UFOs. Blumenthal wrote a biography about Dr. John Mack. This was the Harvard psychiatrist who took people who claim to have been abducted by aliens, and he took their claims seriously. You can join in on your insights on Alien Life, 800-642-1234. So, Ralph, what role did the Robert Bigelow, the hotel tycoon, have in funding Dr. John Mack's research and then advancing the National Institute for Discovery Science?
Well, he did fund anomalous research. He was very interested in things that other people and other, celebrities shy away from. So in that sense, he was courageous like John Mack. He famously funded a poll back in the early 90s that tried to establish how many people might have had these alien encounters. And it immediately got bogged down in controversy because the way they extrapolated from certain questions, have you ever seen a strange figure in the room? Have you ever had, thoughts of flying? Because they couldn't ask straight out, have you ever been abducted? So they asked these threshold questions. And from that, it was a Roper poll, they concluded that 3.7 million adult Americans probably had been abducted or had abduction experiences. And so that caused a storm of controversy because it didn't seem right.
And there are therapy groups out there that support groups out there for these people.
There are indeed. And from my research, because I talked to a lot of these people myself, quite apart from John Mack's research. quite apart from John Mack's research, I talked to a number of these people on my own, and I know there are a lot of them out there, and they are meeting, as you say, in support groups, because the only people they feel safe in sharing these very strange experiences with are each other. So it's not a obscure phenomenon, let's put it that way. There are a lot of people with very strange stories that they recount consciously and under hypnosis or relaxation techniques. And they are as mystified by these experiences as anybody else, if not more so. But they have a basic consistency.
We're talking with journalist and author Ralph Blumenthal, who's with us on the investigation into UFOs, into alien abductions, how they would unfold. How would you react if a loved one told you they had been abducted by aliens? Would you worry about their mental health, or do you think it is possible that abductions could happen? What are you anticipating out of the Defense Department's report to Congress on UFOs? 800-642-1234. We'll pick this up after a news update on the Ideas Network. You're with us for the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We're discussing how to think about reports of unidentified flying objects in a flurry of media attention surrounding the forthcoming Pentagon report on UFO sightings. The Columbia Journalism Review, it offered a pragmatic view of the media coverage titled UFO Coverage and Journalism's Limits. It said, at times, the gap between our knowledge and the truth is wide. Humility will keep us honest. Journalist Ralph Blumenthal wrote The Believer, and he is with us for the hour. Let's go to John now in Brown Deer. Hi, John. What are your thoughts about UFOs?
Yes, good morning, and thank you for accepting my questions here. First of all, given the vastness of the physical cosmos and that the laws of physics are the same throughout the physical cosmos, and that the speed of light is approximately, I think, is 8,000 meters per second, and that the infinite expansion of the physical universe is matched by the infinitesimal expansion within the human mind. It seems to me that it's almost a beyond belief, at least my belief, that anything alien, such as another being from a distant world, can come here, given that it takes billions of years for light rays to reach be observable from distant spheres and bodies throughout the universe. We are seeing light, let's say, from Alpha Centauri that is from billions of years ago. The light is not current. That the that light is billions of years old. So things from the far reaches of the cosmos would take billions of years to get here, and nothing is going to live that long.
John, thank you. Ralph, you know, the hard science doesn't add up.
Well, you know what? Hard science is changing all the time. I mean, physics is an astounding field today with what scientists are finding about rules that they thought were immutable. And now we have, spooky action at a distance and the dark energy and dark matter making up, vast majority of matter and energy in the universe. We don't know what it is. So to say that this could not be possible because our current understanding of the laws of physics rule it out, I think is short-sighted. I agree with you that it seems impossible, far-fetched certainly, that, we have images from a black hole of 58 million light years away. So that's how far we can, reach out. But that any, living thing could traverse these distances and still be alive seems impossible. And yet there are things that we don't understand, such as the dimensionality of the universe. One of the experiencers told John Mack, and I quote in my book, that she thought space was curved to the extent that these beings were living right next to us because the universe was folded in on itself. So they didn't have to traverse great distances. So, I mean, that's speculation. But what I'm saying is that to assume that we know everything about the universe now and that this is has to be impossible, I think, is short-sighted.
But what would you say, though, to this critique that talking about aliens, talking about space ghosts, they're just fueling really dangerous conspiracy theories that, you know, people have lived through what President Trump has done in denial and in spreading out conspiracy theories to imperil democracy? Is talking about UFOs healthy for our democracy?
Well, it's not a conspiracy theory if you start with data and evidence. And certainly the data on UFOs is now established that they exist physically because they're tracked on radar. They're captured on, thermal imaging devices. They're eyeballed by our highest trained, military observers. So that doesn't fuel a conspiracy theory to say that there's something out there that science verifies that our instruments and machines capture that is out there. Now, aliens is a further reach because we don't have the kind of data, and that's why it is speculative. But if you listen to the accounts of otherwise sane people talking about their experiences, it's not a conspiracy to listen to their accounts and try to figure out how to match their experiences, their encounters, their accounts of what happened to what we understand in our physical reality. So as long as you maintain a healthy skepticism and ask for data, I don't see that that's destructive at all.
Do you think Dr. Mack believed that it was possible that aliens were abducting humans?
Yeah, well, he was very troubled by the accounts, and he said kind of famously that he didn't think anything happened to these people other than what they recounted. He could find no other explanation, but he granted that it didn't fit into our conceptions of reality, and he thought that perhaps there was some other dimension penetrating our reality, was the way he put it. He agreed that it made no sense, in the world we understand physically. But there are a lot of things that don't make sense, and we grapple with them. And science continues to adjust its understandings of, the sun doesn't go, the sun doesn't circle the earth. We didn't descend from, one divinely created Adam and Eve. We are not masters of our own mental processes. Freud showed us that we're at the service of dark forces that we're not in control of. So science is continually changing. So why do we say, no, now we got to stop? This is the end. Nothing can exist other than what we now understand.
Let's go to Scott now in Madison. Hi, Scott.
Morning. Should the government decide that they're going to reveal the information, what impact is that going to have on organized religion in this world?
Well, not only organized religion, but everything else. First of all, you don't have to worry. The government's not going to reveal everything it knows because it never has. There are some things that are legitimately classified, such as technology and technological questions that they're pursuing, what they understand these craft to be able to do. That will remain classified almost certainly. But I think, the public has been ahead of the government in many ways on this. People know what they've seen in the sky. And when they, when they were told by the government that this is marsh gas or these are reflections or, you're hallucinating or you were seeing an airliner. Or, so they know what they've seen. So I think the government has been needlessly fearful all along of how people would react when the people who've been experiencing these things have been able to handle it. I mean, they know it's strange, but they've been reporting it. So I'm not too worried about how the public will react.
We're talking with Ralph Blumenthal, who's a journalist and author. The book is The Believer, Alien Encounters, Hard Science, and the Passion of John Mack. Ralph, looking at the Pentagon investigation, you know, in the stimulus bill passed last December, there was the requirement that the Defense Department and National Intelligence give a public report on the program in 6 months. That deadline is this month. Do you think we will learn anything new from this report?
Probably not as much as some people are hoping. I think from what we hear, the people doing the investigation have a lot of trouble penetrating levels of highly secret levels of the government where this information is contained. It's always a struggle as to how much to put out. Some of it will be classified. It'll be a classified annex given to, you know, the appropriate Senate and House committees. So I think the idea that this is going to be full disclosure all laid out, I think that's far-fetched. And I don't think we're going to learn too much more than we've already known from the stories, from the leaks, from the leaked videos, the stuff we put out in the New York Times. So I don't think it's going to be a huge revelation at this point.
Why do you think that the military has traditionally downplayed the idea of UFOs?
Well, that's a complicated question. I mean, all along, there were decisions made that this information could not or should not be shared completely with the public. Officially, the government said that there's nothing to see here, folks, just move on, where they were themselves cataloging these encounters quite rigorously internally. There were people, the higher you go in the Air Force, somebody said, the more you find people who believe in the reality of these objects. But the idea early on was that this was somehow subversive and that it had a potential for upsetting the political order and that people can't be trusted with the truth. So this information was squirreled away. There was disinformation put out to discredit people who were legitimately pursuing it. The government really played a rather sad, almost disreputable role in this whole history of UFOs, which has changed, thankfully. Now the Navy has encouraged its personnel to come forward with stories, and there's a general recognition now that it's good to promulgate these stories of sightings. But the whole history of the government here has not been a happy one.
Let's go to Chris in Madison. Chris, what are your insights?
Well, thanks for taking my call. I listened to a book on Audible called The Spacecraft of Ezekiel from the Bible, written in 590 BC, that describes in great detail the experience that Ezekiel had with alien life. And they explained in the book I listened to that Ezekiel did not have words for these things at that time. But yet he was still able to describe in great detail the spacecraft and the experience.
Well, let me jump in on that, because I know what you're saying, and I can answer you this way. Folklore is replete with countless accounts in ancient annals of things that we would recognize today as UFOs, unidentified, strange flying things. And Ezekiel in the Bible with the chariot of fire, and during the Middle Ages, flaming shields in the sky and galleons. They were often portrayed in the old accounts as objects that people were then familiar with, because they didn't have words to describe UFOs. But the idea was the same, that unfamiliar objects were seen in the sky and going back thousands of years. So it is a well-known subject of study by folklorists to try to relate these today's encounters with things going back thousands of years to say that it's not new.
Author Ralph Blumenthal is with us for the hour as we discuss what to make of unidentified flying objects, people seeing the skies, accounts of alien abduction. Are you appreciative that the Defense Department is investigating UFOs? Do you worry the military is withholding important information? What do you believe and why? Still time to talk, 800-642-1234. Back in a minute on the Ideas Network. It's the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Later this month, the Pentagon is expected to produce a report for Congress on UFOs. A task force was established last year to collect information and investigate what they call unexplained aerial phenomena, or UAPs, after those pilots came forward with videos. Do you think discussions about alien visitors are delusions, or should we take these accounts seriously? Still time, 800-642-1234. We have journalist Ralph Blumenthal, who's with us for about 9 more minutes. Let's go to Tony in Sturgeon Bay, who wants to explore time and space. Hi, Tony.
Good morning. Thank you. Possible that we don't understand linear time, and linear time may be just a human fantasy so that we could lament the past, enjoy the present, and think about the future.
Tony, thanks. Linear time, do we are we thinking about this in our own way?
Well, we are very anthropocentric, and, you know, one prime example is that we are searching the universe with radio waves, sending out radio signals, which John Mack, the Harvard psychiatrist I wrote about in my book, The Believer, said was ridiculous. It was like searching the heavens for a good Italian restaurant. The civilizations out there are possibly, some of them, you know, thousands, millions of years ahead of us, and radio waves would be hopelessly antiquarian. Perhaps it's the best tool we have, as the scientists say, and the cheapest to get information out into the far reaches of the cosmos, certainly the cheapest. There's a lot, you know, we don't understand about time, obviously. You know, Einstein's theory is only 100 years old, and the universe is 13 billion years old. So there's a lot of time for people to, you know, to come to understand things, you know, ahead of us. So we just don't understand how time and space can be manipulated, and how these craft, these UFOs, are able to cover such vast distances and disappear in the twinkling of an eye, appear and disappear, and operate underwater, apparently, because they've been seen emerging from and plunging into the ocean. You know, we talk about strange. So it's not just the sky. These things have apparently been able to operate in another medium, namely water. So, you know, there's a lot left to understand.
Yeah, Ralph, where are you at with this? From your reporting you've done with claims of alien abductions through all of these interviews and the Mac archive, where are you at with all of this?
You know, I probably have more questions than when I started. But, you know, what I like to say is at least I know what it's not, you know, and it's not the things that people who don't really, who haven't spent the time looking into it, think of first. As I said, all these people reporting alien encounters are insane. Well, they're not insane. They're normal people who've had an unexplained experience. It's nightmares. Well, it doesn't only happen at night. It happens in broad daylight. People in their cars have these experiences. People walking, including a Nobel Prize-winning chemist, Carrie Mullis, who had a very strange encounter with a talking raccoon. you know, I you could say I have more questions than I started with, but at least I don't grab on to instant answers that a lot of people, so-called skeptics, do. And they're so certain of what, you know, how to explain all this, that it to me it's really a step backwards.
Well, on the line of thinking of keeping an open mind, let's bring in Mark in Madison. Hi, Mark.
Hi, good morning. I think when it comes to this, I'm an experiencer myself, and I think it's really important to keep an open mind and not jump to conclusions, because really, at the end of the day, we have to acknowledge that our perceptions are limited, right? We only have the abilities that, you know, sight, you know, hearing, sound, everything that we're experiencing is limited by our human limitations. So we can't necessarily jump to conclusions based on those, right? Mm. And if history is replete with strange stories, as it was alluded to before, with folklore, religion. People are trying to make sense of something they can't understand. And we have to acknowledge that with humility. We don't understand everything. And if we keep an open mind, I think we might get closer to something that might be the truth.
Mark, you say, I just want to jump in here. Mark is saying he's an experiencer. What experiences have you had with your senses?
Well, back when I was in the fifth grade, this is 1979, I woke in the middle of the night and looked out my window, and I saw in the distance a light, which I thought initially was a street light, but it was a glowing football-shaped object, and it was a circle above and below each end of the point there. I was hovering, and then a beam shot down. And then it went up, and then it took off like a sort of in a zigzag pattern. Nothing I'd ever seen or heard of before in my very young years. This is my, in fifth grade, and it changed my world. The next day I went in, I was drawing on a chalkboard and telling all the kids what I saw. And of course, it's an odd thing. But I have abduction memories as well. A lot of that really started to come to the fore, old memories. When I was reading Whitley Strieber's Communion, and it just sparked a whole lot of these kind of repressed memories. And even with that, I don't know what my experience was.
Yeah.
I don't know if it was triggering something deep within my psyche. I don't know if it's something that's a primal way that we encounter the world and make, kind of like pareidolia, where we make sort of images out of abstract ideas. I think our minds are constantly trying to grasp reality and make sense of things. So maybe, we have archetypes that we look to.
Yeah, Mark, thank you so much for sharing. Short on time here. Ralph, go ahead, jump in.
Yeah, I was going to say that, experiences like Mark's need to be studied. That's where the hard science comes in. People who've had these experiences science needs to understand what may be going on in their psyche, in their spiritual environs, in their brains. It's very curious. And what's going on with other people who don't have these experiences? They need to be studied. Why don't other people have these experiences? I start my book on John Mack with a conference at MIT in 1992 that brought together atomic scientists and folklorists and psychiatrists. And they're all, coming forward with their theories on how to investigate this phenomenon. That's what we need more of. And it was a very brave thing to do to have this conference. MIT provided a venue and all these scientists came together. They put out a thick book, documenting all their discussions. So anyone who wants to delve into this field needs to read things like that to understand, the state of information, what's available, what's missing, and where we go from here.
In the last few moments we have with you, do you think the Pentagon report will change the conversation at all around UFOs? Will it bring credibility to the part of society that has mocked UFOs?
Yeah, I think that's the most important thing it'll do. And the Pentagon has already done that by adding credibility to the subject, by telling military personnel that they don't have to hide experiences that they've had. They can come forward and report them without being assigned to the mental ward. A lot of progress has been made, and I think a report that would show that the government is taking this seriously will go a long way to making it a safe discussion. Harry Reid was out front with this. A lot of members of Congress are still afraid to talk about it, but we're moving in the right direction.
Ralph, thank you for joining us.
Thank you. Pleasure to be here.
Ralph Blumenthal was a reporter for the New York Times for 45 years. His new book is The Believer, Alien Encounters, Hard Science, and the Passion of John Mack. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. This is The Morning Show, and you're listening to the Ideas Network.